The opinions expressed are those of the show hosts and may not necessarily be of any company in which the show hosts may represent. Welcome to the Technology Podcast, podcast number 375. I'm Jared Reimer. Sorry for any technical issues as I'm dealing with a technical problem with my headset and it should be replaced very soon. With that being said, it's been a while since we've done a podcast, and I'd like to finally get one out to you. Some months ago, we were in a webinar talking about ChatGPT. Now, I know, it's some months later, but the webinar folks have to have their turn to get it out to their subscriber base and all of that. So we're not able to just go ahead and release it. But I thought this would be good, and I did already put it up on the phone lines, although it'll be coming up again as part of a podcast. The webinar is called ChatGPT: The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And, of course, we know that there's a lot going on with it, Bard, and other language learning models that are out there. I still feel that this is of importance, and I will have other webinars that I'll be releasing before year's end. I hope that you will enjoy the webinar as much as I have bringing it to you. And again, I apologize for the way that this sounds. I am dealing with a technical issue that will be resolved soon. Let me give out my email address. That is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Again, tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. You can email or iMessage that email address. You can also text or WhatsApp me. My phone number is 804-442-6975. Again, 804-442-6975. Now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and get this webinar out. And I hope that you'll enjoy it as much as I did. It was very fascinating. Till next time, thanks so much for listening, and make it a great day.
Welcome, everybody. My name is John Clay, VP of Threat Intelligence here at Trend Micro, and welcome to my monthly threat webinar series. This is June 2023, and today we're going to be talking all about generative AI and large language models. So I'm very excited about it. I'm more excited that I have a guest speaker, Vincenzo Ciacaglini, sorry about that, but
no problem.
He's here to give us a lot of great information. He works here at Trend Micro, and he's going to take over the session here and introduce himself a little bit more and what he does here at Trend Micro, and then we're going to get into the whole stuff around it. Before we get started, though, if you have questions, we will try to take some questions at the end. So feel free to put it into the QA on your screen, and we'll try to get to those. If we don't get to yours, I'll try to get back to you via email afterwards. So with that, Vincenzo, take it away.
Thanks, John, and good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to try to spend the next 40 minutes going through the opportunities, risks, and threats associated to large language models, which are the class of applications, you know, that ChatGPT belongs to. So first of all, a couple of words about myself and the chance to show my brand new corporate profile picture. I've been a senior threat researcher in Trend Micro for almost 11 years now, working in the forward-looking threat research team. That would be the team that is tasked within Trend to perform technology scouting 3 to 4 years in the future. So we look at what the technology might look like in the near future and how This evolution might impact user behaviors and, most importantly, criminal activities. So a good half of the team is actually involved in collaboration with law enforcement, investigations, and so on. I myself have my area of interest mostly in darknet system and machine learning and artificial intelligence, both from an offensive and a defensive point of view. And in that regard, I've authored several publications in the last few years. The biggest, the most important one probably being the paper that we co-authored with Interpol and the United Nations Interregional Crime and Justice Research Institute in 2020, which was called Malicious Uses and Abuses of Artificial Intelligence. And following that, a set of blog posts, to which I will provide the link at the end of the presentation, about risks and limitations of GPT-3 back then, and a follow-up covering ChatGPT. With that in mind, in this presentation, we're going to go through, first of all, a gentle introduction to what large language models are, the way they work, and why understanding the way they work is important to understand their limitations. We'll then see some use cases of how large language models can help improve cybersecurity. Then we will move to the more fun part to me, the funnier part to me, which is, you know, what are the threats and risks linked to LLMs? And finally, we'll draw some conclusions and see what practices can be implemented by businesses to safely adopt them in their daily lives. With that in mind, let's jump right in. So, what is a large language model? What is GPT-3 and ChatGPT? They are, at the very low level, essentially a neural network. You might have heard that term in other situations. You might have heard it associated with things like deep learning. You might have seen them used, for example, for image classifications. They are basically massive set of matrices whose coefficients get trained and gets calculated based on training data related to a specific task. So we have, for example, neural network that receives images as an input and output a label of what it's in the image. You may have neural network that receive audio as an input and output the text that performs speech to text. In the case of language, you might have seen neural network that receive text as an input and output images. That's the case of tools like Midjourney, DALL-E, and all the new generative AI tools. In case of language models like GPT-3, the neural network is tasked to receive text as an input. In the example here, the sentence, recite the first law of robotics, and it outputs what would be the most follow-up text to what the input was. So the input being recite the first law of robotics, the neural network decides that the best follow-up text to that, to fill up that text window, that in the case of GPT-3, it's 2048 tokens, would be a robot may not injure a human being, much like the Asimov formulation of that law. So there are mainly two ways, two interaction modes that we might find with large language models. Here, I'm using as a reference GPT-3 and ChatGPT, but lately we've seen other models being presented, like Llama and Alpaca from Meta, for example. They share the same differences. So one being bulk text generation, meaning you provide all in one session your prompt, meaning the request that you have to your large language model of the task to be completed. Maybe some examples if you want it to be more specific, or if the task is particularly tricky and you want to show the language model what it should output. And the language model fills the gap after that with its proposed output, and the session ends there. The system is stateless. So let me show you an example here. Let's say that you want to use GPT-3 to do a translation. This is the GPT-3 playground. That's all you have to interact with it. You provide a prompting input that says, translate this into French, Spanish, and Japanese, followed up by your sentence to be translated. Here, if you had something trickier, you could also provide your 2-3 examples to show the language model what you want to do. And there you would have, and there in green, the language model spits out the translations in French, quelle salle avez-vous disponible, the translation in Spanish, and the translations in Japanese. So all it's done in the same session, which just with just one interaction, after which the system pretty much resets and it's completely stateless. You cannot ask for follow-up things. You then have the conversational AI approach, which is the one implemented by ChatGPT, where your interaction with the model, it's more of a banter, a back and forth with the transformer, where you start asking for a first thing and then you refine your request further and further by explaining further what you were expecting from him to do, or by changing your target of what you want him to generate, for example, the target language for a translation. And the system in this case, it's actually stateful. It remembers up to an extent what has been said before. So for the same task, in the case of ChatGPT, you would have an interaction like this. First, you ask him to behave like a translator. I want you to be a translator. To which he says, sure, I can translate from English to any language. What language would you like me to translate to? French. Très bien. And he switches in French and he asks you to for the sentence to be translated. What room do you have available? And he answers with a translation. Now you can change your task and say, okay, now translate it in Spanish, to which you get a translation, and then in Japanese. And you'll notice here that when I tell you to change language, I don't have to specify the sentence again. I say now translate it, and the model remembers what it was, as in the sentence to be translated. That goes the statefulness. So some key concepts and caveats to keep in mind. How do language models decide the best outcome given a set of input words? They decide it because models like GPT-3, they have been trained, meaning their 175 billion coefficient composing its neural network have been calculated using a training made of a very, very large corpus of text. We're talking about 80 million documents, if I recall correctly, taken from archives on the internet that basically spans multiple languages and include programming languages, which is why you can have services like Codex and GitHub Copilot that can turn your comment into actual code. Or it's why you can have one of the earliest demos of GPT-3 was like translating English into HTML. You could feed him the description of a web page and it would output the actual HTML code to render the web page. However, what is it actually learning from this large corpus of text is, in fact, the statistical relations between words in a language, meaning it learns that if I have recite the first law of robotics, the most probable outcome that best fits those words is, in fact, Asimov formulations. A robot may not injure a human being, because statistically, that's what is seen the most in its corpus of text. Statistical relations, it's all that they learn and all that they use to emulate language. That's why researchers have been calling them in the press, has been called language models in the press, stochastic parrots, because they're able to repeat and to emulate language by learning the statistics behind the occurrence of words. But that's important because what they do not learn, it's the world model that ultimately comprises a language. They don't learn what concepts are, what are the relations between concepts, how to actually do inference. They're very good at emulating inference, especially the most advanced models, but they don't do it deterministically. That is why, for example, when they generate code, what they do not learn is the computational architecture that runs that code behind. And we notice that when we ran, for example, lots of experiments in trying to generate and explain assembly code. You can feed GPT-3 some assembly code and tell it to explain it. It will eventually explain it by comparing it with what he has in his training. But if you change just one variable in the code, it might actually not catch it because, again, it doesn't know the computational model behind. The consequences of this is that it's fairly frequent to have things like output inconsistency, so answers that change if you ask the same questions again, You certainly have factual inaccuracy. And I guess, I don't need to remind the audience about the very recent case where a lawyer wanted to argue to have ChatGPT write an argument to court, and ChatGPT came up with an amazing argument with lots of reference to cases that were non-existent at all. It can have hallucinations. Actually, one of my favorite jokes to my CTO when he first started talking about language models, I just told him, you like ChatGPT so much, why don't you ask him about yourself? And ChatGPT answered him that he was certainly the CTO of Hewlett Packard. So, and these are things that cannot be avoided due to the very same architecture of the language models. They can be limited in ways. For example, we now have mechanism to extend the body of knowledge of large language models, especially to overcome the fact that their knowledge might be limited. ChatGPT, for example, has been trained in 2021, and there stands its knowledge. If you ask it about the Queen of England, it still thinks she's alive. But now we have things like plugins that allows, for example, ChatGPT to go and retrieve updated information before formulating an answer. We have frameworks like LangChain that allows us to combine language models with vector stores, with databases, with agents, and overall retrieve updated information to be used in generating an answer. So before we move to the actual use cases, this is sort of a foreword that I like to present that also gives an idea of how fast this technology is evolving. So March 2023, me and my team, we have a workshop to start brainstorming, possible outlandish use cases, both malicious and not, of language model. Back then, our playground was, you have ChatGPT, you have GPT-3. OpenAI is your provider. You can connect to them through their APIs, which means that, don't think about sharing sensitive information because you can't share them with third parties. Any possible competitor had to invest in extreme computational power to get to a model that was comparable. And thus, comparable models were very few, probably one or two, and certainly were no specialized models. The next month, just 1 month after that, we started seeing Google entering the market with Bard, Meta coming with their new languages, Alibaba coming with its own language models, Databricks with Dolly. We have Alpaca, Llama, tons of others, first open source models coming up. We now have models that can run on-premise in your infrastructure or in your local machine. We have specialized models. We have Bloomberg GPTs that's trained over financial data. The BBC mentioned that they trained a language model over their own archive, which means that somewhere you can actually chat with the real Doctor Who. Open source model, as I said, we started seeing autonomous agents. Now we can do applications with sensitive data because now we can run models in our own infrastructure. And that was in a month. Comes June right now. I honestly lost track of how many players have come into the market. There's like the Yukon gold run back again of AI. We have countless models. This is a table taken from a paper published in May called A Survey of Large Language Models. This is a list, a non-exhaustive list of all the models that they surveyed. And this table has probably become obsolete the moment that paper got published. Open source models, lost track of them as well. This is a table, I'm not publishing it here as for people to actually read through. It's just to give you an idea of how many open source models are there available. This table comes from the leaderboard of a website called Hugging Face. Hugging Face, it's basically a repository of artificial intelligence models, from language models to computer vision to whatever applications. Imagine it to be the GitHub of AI models. This is the leaderboard where they compare performances of all the open source language models they have. This is 1/3 of what's available. We are in the hundreds now of models that get specialized through either context specialization or task specialization. It's becoming untraceable, like impossible to track them down, to keep track of them. We have LangChain, as I said, has become fairly popular. Microsoft is going to come around with PromptFlow to sort of compete. We started seeing multimodal systems where you can feed an image and it will comment it, or vice versa, will generate images. it's become a wild run. I'm saying this because, first of all, some of the use cases that we'll be presenting you, while they'll be presented with relation to GPT-3 because it's the most renowned, and while they have probably been mitigated with GPT-3, they are still very relevant due to the fact that you have tons of competitors that might come up with competing models showing the exact same problems. Also, it might be relevant because when I talk about the near future here, the classical definition of near future being 6 months to a year from now, here becomes probably tomorrow. And I'm not exaggerating, it happens to me at least twice in the past few months, where, for example, I had my CTO asking me the contextually to that workshop that we had, oh, can you please tell me, you know, can you also answer the question of like, what would Microsoft do given that they own, you know, OpenAI and the technology? And I say, sure, give me a week. And the next day, Microsoft comes up with Microsoft Security Copilot, to which I said, well, that's your answer. In another presentation, I basically talked about the dangers of sharing data. I talked about the hypothesis of, you know, people starting to share their health data to a new hypothetical WebMD GPT where you share your symptoms and it tells you your diagnosis and the dangers of that. Sure enough, the next day I hear about Dr. Gupta, a new service where you share your health data and the language model tells your diagnosis, run by none other than Mr. Martin Shkreli, the same guy who tried to jack up the prices of insulin last year in the US. So near future here is a very, very tight definition. With that in mind, let's look at some use cases and let's see about how language models can help cybersecurity, for example. Well, first of all, you know, you asked me, but we already have the two major players who already came out with their solutions. I think the latest one was Google that presented the AI workbench, the security AI workbench powered by their language model called Palm. And, you know, Microsoft came with the security copilot couple of months ago, and they both sort of share the same concept, which is ingesting and harmonizing lots of heterogeneous sources of intel and vulnerabilities and so on, in order to provide better visibility to the users. Because keep in mind, they're called language transformers for a reason, because they can take the language offered in a way, let it be reports of a certain way, and they can generate, you know, YARA rules, they can generate other forms of report, they can generate insights and so on. And again, this is what we know so far of Google solutions. Microsoft has now become more holistic, integrating all of their products in a system that as well plans to use large language models paired with, and you see there, their knowledge graph for grounding, because they know all too well that they cannot rely on GPT-3 for factual correctness in order to answer questions that might come from their product. Now, I can also assure you that out there, every single security vendor right now, it's working on their own LLM-related solutions. I know that very much for a fact. And if you think of the possibilities, well, this is sort of what we can see LLMs being of help for cybersecurity. You know, it can help, first of all, within the company, and that's not limited to cybersecurity, for general productivity. We'll see in a moment how many possible tasks that can be accelerated by just using large language models. There's the whole issue of data parsing and consolidation. God knows that in the domain, we have to deal with tons of reports coming from different sources, coming from, you know, we have vulnerability reports, we have campaign reports, we have incident reports, we have new malware reports coming from all sorts of different vendors. And each and every one of them really, really like to use its own format with its own graphics and its own structure. And, you know, exchanging data in a secure way has always been a struggle because we are lacking the adoption of a concrete standard, for example. Well, now you have a tool that can understand human language and hopefully extract the indicators that you might be interested in. Explaining code and scripts. This is no news. You can use it to do the obfuscation, explaining code as a general learning tool for malware analysts, for example. it's all in there. You've probably seen the, I call them stunts, where they show how ChatGPT was able to analyze a piece of code and not only explain what it does, but also, that line right here may be subject to a buffer overflow vulnerability if somebody would craft an input like this. Malware knowledge. We have many vendors with many detection names, and you know, a language models that would know of all of them might be of help of navigating throughout the many detection names. Report generation. God knows, we got a lot of information to provide to customers every time there's a detection of an attack. Being information overload, it's a very real danger there, and we might want to craft that information into a report that's easily digestible and maybe tailored to a specific customer. Triage and classification, much like information overload, alert fatigue, it's a real problem. And we deal with cases and how much of a priority is a case, how much of a priority is an alert. Is this one a real infection? Should we look at it immediately? Can we triage it for later? Is this log an anomaly? Every sort of triage classification can be performed fairly with decent success by a large language model. So just to go more into details of some of these points, this is a slide from a presentation on Microsoft Security Copilot where they show some of the possible use cases. And you can see from some of them, they are fairly trivial. I mean, some of them are not really related to anything in particular, like calculate time complexity, summarize for a second grader. As trivial as that might be, how many times you felt that you might have needed something like that? Product name generator, summarization for long text, translate from English to commands and SQL queries and generate queries from natural language. These are all fairly simple tasks that overall can help save a lot of time in your everyday working life. As a matter of fact, I just experienced one of those wow moments merely 2 days ago. I was having a call on Teams with a colleague in China discussing this very topic. It was an hour and a half long call that we recorded to share with other colleagues in the States because they were out of the time zone. And it was an hour and a half long. So they would have to go through the whole recordings, luckily speeding it up a little bit to make it go faster. We had the transcription of the call because we get them automatically. After the call, my colleague sent me what was effectively the minutes of the call generated by his own large language models. And so I asked him, how, what is there? So he told me like, yeah, well, I was tired of having to write the minutes. So we couldn't use ChatGPT directly because those were, you know, confidential calls. So he deployed his own version of Llama, I believe, and he trained it to basically write minutes out of the transcription of the Teams calls, where you literally have what I have been saying summarized, what he has been saying summarized, what were the action items put in a separate list. And we know we've been speaking about action items throughout an hour and a half full. What would be the next step and everything that was discussed, all summarized neatly in a pretty much one page and a half. I was shocked, you know, with all my spending days and days working with this, that one use case just, I was like, I wanted to see it immediately, basically. Extracting data from text reports. This is a couple of pictures that I took of not GPT-3 allegedly. I took it in March. It was from a competitor that was trying to promote their own language models developed in Europe and so on. And so I asked them if they could show me a use case for cybersecurity. So sure enough, they pulled up this text from, I think I checked, it was from the New York Times, talking about the ransomware Ryuk coming from Russia, attacking hospitals and so on. And sure enough, it was able to extract from the text without previous training, without specific training, entities and relationships in the text. But not just any entities or any relationships, because if you talk about, you know, places and dates and company names, that'd be easy. You could do with regular expressions, if you ask me. These are STIX entities. You see attack patterns used by the attack. You can see the cyber force. It identifies the goal of the attack. It identifies what malware got used, attacking what organization and what weaknesses were exploited. Not only that, it creates the relations. Now, the company was German, so the relationships table is in German, but essentially says, you know, criminal syndicates targets American hospitals. It says that Fury targets American hospitals, again, as a cyber force. It says the hacking was used by the malware Ryuk, and so on. These are very important relationships when you're trying to build your knowledge graph for a campaign that you would then use to make, for example, inferences and find, I don't know, if some of your customers might be impacted because they are a part of the same sector. Code explanation and the obfuscation, we mentioned it. This is an example that we've been using during a competition in February. We did, you know, we had an obfuscated JavaScript function that was absolutely impossible to analyze, feed it to ChatGPT, and it's actually able to give you the obfuscated version that's much easier to read. Not only that, I've seen that doing, for example, decomposing the function in its working sections, then associating MITRE techniques to those working sections and basically showing you what are the techniques associated with a malicious script. Say that you need to do reverse engineering of a platform that runs on an architecture that you're not too practical, too familiar with. You can now have execution flow, ChatGPT perform execution flows on a piece of code and show you exactly what gets called and when. And again, examples related to code, I think we've seen them all throughout the last year. Better malware understanding. This is another use case that we found where, again, you have vendors giving a certain malware, and vendors like to name things using each its own logic. Some of them are more precise, you know, and they would call something juicy potatoes. Some will we just call them a variant like sweet potato. Some will we just call them malware. Someone we just say it's unsafe. Someone will call them Trojan. It's really hard to navigate the different detection names when you have a binary. But now, if you have a large language model that has been trained on those detections, it can then tell you that a set of detection names corresponds to a malware called Juicy Potato, and the Juicy Potato is a tool that's used for privilege escalation, blah, 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 and give you all the information right there. On the topic of malware, let's then look at what are the threats and risks related to large language models. Now, this is to me is the funniest part because, again, it's what we generally focus on. And when we focus on the risk associated with, you know, GPT-3 and similar, we tend to group them into these four areas. There's like risks inherent to the technology, meaning, you know, just by simply using the technology, these are the things that should be careful. There's how large language models can be of help to criminals, meaning they are a production tool to everyone. That includes good guys and bad guys. You know, they're a learning tool for them too. It can help writing text for them too. Why not? There's ways on how criminals might actually abuse the language models. We'll see in what different ways. And there's how will malware evolve exploiting the newly acquired capabilities that large language models might offer. And we'll see about that as well. So on the technology risk, I think one of the biggest one inherent to the technology is the risk of exposed leak of leaked data. And there's two ways that the data can be leaked. First of all, large language models are trained on public data, let it be code on GitHub, let it be things that you might have published in the past and so on. That data might contain sensitive information. That information might leak. So it might be used for training and it might leak in the responses of your language model. That is a screenshot of an experiment that we ran in 2021 with GPT-3, Codex more specifically, where we basically set ourselves to the task of getting it to leak either intentionally or unintentionally to leak sensitive information. And we managed to. We managed to get it to leak developer's name, as you see here, sensitive URLs, but also email addresses, phone numbers, shipment numbers, credentials from for services and URL for said services, all sorts of stuff. And now granted, I have to commend OpenAI because they've been working hard at the problems and they managed to mitigate it a lot. But then again, we now are in the Yukon gold rush of AI, which means that there's a ton of competitors that are now eager to come out on the market with their own language models, their own solution, which might very well still be affected by this very problem. There is then the issue of just users oversharing. We've seen it already. Samsung went into the press last month because they realized that some of their employees were sharing IP covered data to ChatGPT because they were just using it to help them in their everyday work, except that their everyday work involved protected data. Common users might have the same problem. For example, yesterday, ChatGPT released this new function of link sharing, where you have your chat session with ChatGPT where you might have shared personal things, and you can now generate a sharing link that can be published on social media, which gives a one more way for users to inadvertently share sensitive information, just as an example. In general, it's a novel technology. People are inclined to use novel technologies more carelessly than they would use for tested ones. It's a renowned thing. It's a notorious phenomenon. It's not just that part, however. Large language models such as ChatGPT can also be used to just gather information that is already being shared and help bad guys, for example, perform reconnaissance on a target. This is an experiment that we ran with Bing Plus, where we tried to get information on our team's director, Herr Martin Rösler, and we asked him where does he live. And sure enough, you know, Bing Plus went and checked three different sources and told us that, yes, he's the leader of the threat research and cybercrime investigation team at Trend Micro. He's been there for 20 years. His interests are AI, IoT, and ransomware. He lives in Munich, and so on. All neatly packaged in one nice message. Say that you are a bad guy that wants to target public infrastructure, like energy plant, for example. Now there are services like Sensis, which is a service aimed at discovering exposed infrastructure on the internet and indexing it, that support natural language queries, meaning I can ask Sensis GPT if he can tell me if he knows of, let's say, SCADA systems associated with nuclear plant located in Russia with port XX and Y exposed on the internet. And I can do it just using natural language. Accessing to data is not the only way large language models can be a learning tool for bad guys. In general, they are an excellent learning tool in themselves, as long as, you know, they keep, you know, you can verify the factual accuracy of what they are teaching you. And much like they're an excellent learning tool for you, they're an excellent learning tool for bad guys to learn, you know, how to attack a website, you know. As long as you don't ask ChatGPT to attack a website, but to check for vulnerabilities on your own website, ChatGPT would gladly tell you, you know, step by step what to do. It will generate social engineering script for you. It will generate fake content for you, and so on. But that is no news. One of the features, however, that both me and my colleagues believe might be in its being so underrated, but one of the most disruptive for the future, remains the very trivial translation. And it's so disruptive because when you think about it, we've been sort of enjoying up until now this safety from criminals that are not native English speakers, for example, given by the fact that, you know, if you were receiving an email from a non-native speaker, you would be able to spot it relatively easily because of the grammar error, because of certain expressions that you might not be using. Again, especially if you are a native speaker, there are some expressions that acquired speakers do not use, where you have to become very proficient to acquire certain expressions and so on. Well, now I have a tool that can do that in my stead and can do it in multiple languages. And it can de facto open new criminal market to non-native speakers. But it doesn't stop there. This is an extract from one of the very demo, the very first demo of GPT-3, where it showed how it could translate from legalese to plain English and vice versa, which means that not only, you know, criminals can translate different languages, they can now translate lingo. And you might know how important is jargon and a community lingo when you're trying to impersonate a member of certain groups. You know, law enforcement have their jargon, IT professionals have their jargon, professionals of the energy sectors have their jargon. Everybody has their lingo that defines their own group. And now criminal can actually impersonate that specific group, which becomes very powerful when you're trying to do business email compromise, when you're trying to do phishing and so on. On the topic of impersonation, this is an excerpt of the very first stunt the GPT-3 pooled, called, I said GPT-3 pooled, like somebody using GPT-3 pooled in October 2020. And this was somebody wrote a bot that exploited GPT-3 to go covert in a public forum, like a Reddit, the Ask Reddit subforum, and answer questions. That's a subforum where people just ask questions about really any topic of everyday lives. And the bot managed to answer questions and go undetected for a full week. What's funny is that the reason why they then busted it to be a bot wasn't because, you know, his writing style betrayed it or the language he used betrayed it. No, it was because people realized from the table here that this user was writing too much for a human to possibly be able to type physically on a keyboard that much text. And so writing at scale and impersonating at scale, it's a trivial task for a large language models. Even more so that we are now starting to see in the wild Twitter botnets that rely on ChatGPT, for example. The reason that we can spot them is because, as I said, these are not deterministic systems and they suffer from response inconsistency, which means that you ask it to generate 1,000 tweets, especially when you go on controversial content, some of these tweets will receive as a response from ChatGPT, well, I'm sorry, I cannot really do that. And if you don't supervise what you're doing, some of those error messages will eventually trickle down in your Twitter botnet. On the topic of impersonation, we actually just released, like yesterday, a research on how bad guys are starting to exploit tools like ChatGPT together with voice cloning, exploiting, for example, the biometrics that people inadvertently share on social media when they do like challenges and trends, to de facto steal identities and impersonate people by generating content in their stead. This again, you'll see that you get the link at the end of the presentation. It's fresh out of the oven, this new research. On the topic of attacks to language models, this is something that we hypothesized in March, and we are now seeing it slowly happening. Meaning, in March, if you wanted, for example, to perform phishing on Bing Plus and treat people on, you know, connecting on your site that really resemble Bing Plus, you had the problem that Bing Plus relies on ChatGPT to answer queries. And that's easy to spot because ChatGPT is a very specific way to answer messages. So if you wanted to phish Bing Plus, for example, and inject malicious content, well, how would you do? You can't really ask ChatGPT to then answer those things and inject content. It was very hard. Now, however, we have language models that, while they might not be on par with ChatGPT on all of the tasks, they might be good enough to trick you into believing you are chatting with ChatGPT, or you're using Bing Plus, or you're using Google Bard, where in fact you are on a phishing site that runs a large language model trained by a bad guy and trained to the sole topic of giving you malicious URL, injecting malicious URLs, giving you false informations, asking you for sensitive data, and so on. And this is really true if you consider even third-party apps, you know, the fake ChatGPT apps that are starting to populate the different mobile marketplaces. And as a matter of fact, we've seen already that accounts have started to become compromised by fake ChatGPT apps. And so these apps will become more and more able to trick users by just exploiting actual language models. On the topic of malware. So how will malware benefit from large language models? We see essentially two main ways in which malware might actually exploit large language models. But one, we've seen it because we've seen research being done and proof of concept being developed ever since the beginning of the year, where researchers basically managed to trick ChatGPT into generating code for malicious purposes despite its many policies. And all of these three researchers that we quote here, they all rely on really the same principle, which is that malware in itself is not other than just a set of harmless primitives that you can deconstruct it to. Think about a ransomware, for example. You know, a ransomware in itself is malicious, but what he does, well, he goes searching for files in your hard drive. It then encrypts some of those files or all of those files, and then he asks you for a ransom to decrypt those files. But the operation in itself, like searching for files, I mean, that's what I do every day. There's nothing malicious in searching for files. Encryption files, I mean, I consider it to be a safety security measure, you know, if you want to keep your data private. So in themselves, they are not malicious operations as long as you share the decryption keys after that. If you ask for money to retrieve the decryption keys, then yes, it's a ransomware. So using this principle, it is possible to deconstruct any malware into its set of harmless primitives and to ask ChatGPT to generate the isolated code for said primitives to then be assembled into a malware who then has the perks of being very hard to detect because the code is generated at runtime and it always changes, and exploiting a very legitimate service such as OpenAI. Like, I cannot block, you know, all connections to OpenAI just to save people from the eventual risks of having somebody generating malware. There's a second aspect where we think that large language models will be helping malware become more powerful, and it's in the scope of info stealers. So info stealers are the class of malware that's whose goal is to go on your machine and look for sensitive data to steal: credentials, credit card numbers, passwords, Facebook profiles, all sorts. Now, this is a table that comes from an internal research of ours that we are finishing right now. It's a comparison. So in this table, we compare basically of all the top 16 info stealers on the market, what they're actually after. It's not meant, again, to be seen to details. It's just meant to give you the idea of the massive amount of data that this malware goes after. They look for every browser, for out-of-field data, for navigation data, for credentials, store credentials, credit card numbers, Facebook profiles. They look for password, for FTP sites, chat clients, mail clients. This is, again, it's one out of 3 pages worth of these tables. Why am I saying that? Because these operations are A, very noisy. You need to go after all of this data, package it up, exfiltrate a massive amount of data, and so without being detected. They are very, let's say, coarse. Like, you get all of the credentials for a user, but you don't know which one are the important one. Like, you get on the same plate, you get his banking account and his Pornhub credentials, not the same thing. And so what you can do with them, it's really not much other than reselling them on some Russian underground market. But what if the info stealers could be smarter? This is, again, another of the earliest demo of GPT-3, where they showed how it could parse the PDF files. In this case, that was the Twitter financial report for 2019. And it showed how you could basically paste the table covering the financial earnings, and GPT-3 was able not only to understand those financial figures, but also any derived figures from there. And so what if your next generation info stealer might actually, you know, without even having to rely on OpenAI, but just running locally on, say, your company HR server, he could slowly but steadily go through the CVs of your employees, their email exchanges, their chat exchanges, their compensation information, and then find out, for example, that employee A earns 10% less than all of the employees in the same area with the same cost of livings, which makes him a great target in case you want to bribe someone to get, you know, espionage out of the company. Or that executive B has been having a weird exchange with his assistant despite being married, which makes it an excellent candidate for blackmail, for example. Or that your company is having a weird financial quarter and it's going to release their do their quarterly release next week, to which you might want to, it might be a good occasion to short the company and then spread misinformation grounded enough to make it believable, thanks to the insights that you have, so to get the stock price plummet after you've shorted it. These are all things that, you know, with the use of a large language model that runs in your infrastructure undetected, these are all the sort of information that a large language model could provide in the near future that would allow for much more targeted attacks that would gather not only information, but intelligence on a target. And so with that, drawing some conclusions. First of all, some key takeaways of all of this. First of all, obviously, large language models have the potential of boosting your company productivity to uncanny levels, but you need to keep in mind that they are called language transformers for a reason. So when you want to embark in certain applications, always keep that in mind and never trust them when they are looking for, when you're looking for factual accuracy, because we have seen it, people have tried and they've got burned severely by a judge. Also, sensitive and personal information will be easier to leak and easier to exploit. We've seen it. Criminals in general will really have a blast with large language models just as a tool to lower the entry barrier in criminal market, especially for non-English speakers, but also just plain old foreign markets. And then finally, that as we saw, you know, malware with LLM capabilities will propel the concept of polymorphic and targeted to the next levels. So if you want to have a couple of guidelines, you know, all courtesy of actually ChatGPT, who came out with these and more, I'd say, and I agree with ChatGPT on that, I vetted them personally, keep employees, you know, aware and trained on the risk and the inner workings of large language models. Because again, if Samsung managed to leak their own IP, and Samsung, I'd like to believe that it employs rather smart people, it means that being smart is not enough. People need to be aware, especially because this is a very, very attractive technology. Vendor due diligence. You will have vendors proposing their own AI-based solutions in the future. Make sure that they've done their due diligence. Make sure that their data retention policies are on par. Plan for incident response. Clearly, that, you know, goes without saying, and it should be on the handbook of every company, really. And to conclude, if you're planning, for example, to employ a customized language models that you want to train with your data, or either fine-tune with your data or use beside your own data sources, make sure that it's audited and updated regularly, and stay informed about the security advisories of such language models. So to wrap it up, here are all of the links of the publications related to, you know, LLMs, but not only that, also leaked biometrics and using deepfakes for stolen identities and airport kidnapping. I believe those are topics that you might be interested in. You'll find them in the slide set. And with that, I thank you all for your attention, and I'm open to questions.
Yeah, Vincenzo, that was awesome. And we're getting people responding in the chat that this is one of the better sessions they've ever seen with ChatGPT and generative AI. So very happy you were able to join us. We do have a couple questions, though, that I wanted to ask you. One was going, given the ongoing debate on the security implications of open versus closed source language learning models, can you discuss the advantages and disadvantages associated with each approach?
I would say, so the main approach of open source versus closed source would be in the ability to derive it fine-tune it, and so on. Keeping in mind that, you know, when it comes to language models, even if something is open source, retraining is a huge effort. You know, unlike general open source project, when you have the source code, you compile it, and you have your applications that you can customize. Language models, even when they are smaller and when they're optimized, are still something that's very costly to retrain. You need raw computational power and GPU instances, and you need to organize your training data, and you need to filter your training data. So in the overall debate, I mean, I've seen people like Professor Ian LeCun, that's the director of research in Meta. He's perfectly fine of having closed source model and open source models living side by side. The advantage of using one over the other really depends on the use case. I don't think there's a red line that can be drawn there. And in general, with large language models, it really depends on your use case, the sensitivity of your data, how much money are you willing to spend, and so on.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's catching a lot of people by surprise is the cost. There's definitely going to be a big cost. So, and then I think also if you're looking to utilize a generative AI for your own data, then obviously a closed session would probably be one of the best ways to go, because you're only dealing with your own data in that case. You don't need to go out to the internet to figure things out. So good. Another question came up, which is interesting, because you mentioned about creating websites. So it asks, can a ChatGPT session create its own website, register a URL, and reserve a DNS name?
Any thoughts? Yes. Well, potentially, yes. And I see no problem. I haven't seen it implemented yet. But on the purely theoretical part, yeah. I mean, if you see ChatGPT plugins, they are tailored, they are developed to interact with external APIs. So developing a website and even developing a website resembling another website, it's perfectly doable. We've done it. Other people have done it. There's absolutely no problem with that. Buying and registering a domain, as long as there's an API to do that, you can get, if not ChatGPT, another language model to do that as well.
Yeah, and this is where I fear about the rapid ability to create phishing web pages, right? Including typo-squatted domains and all that good stuff. So this is another area that, while it'd be great for people who want to create their own websites for good, it's definitely, we can see the other side of the fence that could happen. Another question from Evans. He's a MS student in cybersecurity at Yeshiva University in New York. And he asks, should we be concerned about GPT-3 decoding encrypted data in the future? And how prepared are we to, if it's inevitable? Thanks.
Again, the one go-to answer for any computer related question remains, it depends. It depends on the encryption. In general, properly done encryption should not be breakable by a language model, because language models do not have that capability in general. That being said, there's a lot of improperly done encryption out there that could probably be broken by a carefully crafted language model by means of brute force attacks or other more traditional techniques. Like the actual breaking the encryption scheme seems to me a little far-fetched, but again, it really depends on the encryption that you use. There are encryption schemes that have been broken already, and the language models might have knowledge of that. There are things that are mathematically unbreakable unless using something really, really powerful beyond what we currently have.
Right. Yeah, good answer. And I just want to clarify to people, you will be receiving an email with a link to, and you will be receiving the actual slides. So I know that last slide had a bunch of links to it. So you'll get these slides, everybody, so you can take advantage of that. Also, there was a question about recommendations and managing internally, and Vincenzo went over that. So you can look at that when you get the slides on that slide. But one other question, and this is a concern obviously out there with misinformation, but how do we address the fact that the abuse of these tools can undermine our trust in people and systems, which will then undermine society as eventually nothing can be trusted? News, emails, websites. It's a big question, man.
I'd say the same way we've been doing it so far. You know, it's a powerful tool. You know, it's not the first powerful tool that we've been having. The problem with trusting people and tools and so on, it's not a novel one. In general, I personally believe that a healthy skepticism and learning how to check your sources goes a long way. The same thing goes with large language models and goes with ChatGPT. It's just probably you need to tune it up, to push it up a notch, because again, while they are known to be factual inaccurate, they are very good at being factually inaccurate. In fact, from my personal experience, for the ChatGPT hallucinations, what generally happens is that it starts off with a really good batch of grounded information that makes you trust, and then mid-sentence it will just goes very subtly fully ballistic. Like, it's very good at hallucinating. And so that's why I say that application that generally rely on that as the sole source of information could not be trusted, because the amount of work that you're going to put into checking every answer for correctness might be more than just going any traditional way.
Yeah, good. And we have time for one more question. And if we don't get to your question, I apologize, but we'll get back to you via email afterwards. But this is a good one. If you were having, a lot of people on the call today are probably getting asked by their executive staff to implement ChatGPT or generative AI in their organization. So what would be the best message to give these executives that are caught up in this hype? And what would you recommend if you were talking to them?
Oh, I have been talking to them. Well, the first thing you should answer that, how much are you willing to spend? Because these things are not free and cost can skyrocket very easily, especially if you use the more advanced models and if you plan to process a lot of data. That's a first. Secondly, it's not just a cost. So there's three main costs that I see involved in there. There's, again, the cost of using any external language model that you might have. There's a cost into preparing the data, because you might be tempted in running your own language models, but then there's the cost involved with preparing your data. Make sure it's not biased, it's correct, it's well formatted, and so on. And there's the cost of maintaining the model, because again, you need to do auditing, you need to check every now and then the response are correct. So, it's not to curb the enthusiasm, but just to put it in check. You need to tell them, how much are you willing to spend in there? Right. And again, my second thing, and that's what I did with our CTO when we were first talking about investing lots of them and so on, is that, if you ask chat, especially when it came to ChatGPT, because that was the hot stuff back in February, it was, if you ask ChatGPT about yourself, because you yourself is the thing that you know the most intimately, and it's the thing where you will spot the hallucinations immediately and it will hurt the most. And it's actually the same thing that I tell to everybody to sort of put their enthusiasm in check, because that gives you a very precise idea, especially if they are executives, and so there has been public information about them out there in the internet, so there's a reasonable expectations of them being known by the language model. It helps putting people in check and like, okay, this is very powerful, but it's probably not the solutions to every problem I have. It gives them a balanced overview of the pros and cons of using these models.
Yeah. Great. And the last thing I want to leave people is just, there was a question about, is Trend Micro supporting this and looking into ways that we can utilize it? And I'll tell you 100%. We've been using AI since 2005. We've invested in this technology for many, many, many years. And this is just another new version, new way of AI being implemented. We're actually just announced our companion tool, which is going to be part of our Vision One console. So you'll be able to do some things with our Vision One console and the companion generative AI capability. But that we're not stopping there. We actually have an internal contest going on right now where we invite all of our 8,000 employees to be in this AI contest. And this year it's all on generative AI. So we're looking at people getting giving us recommendations on what we can do, and also they're going to be building some generative AI models to solve problems. So we're all in. So, but everybody, thank you very much for attending. Vincenzo, I want to give you a big thank you for supporting my webinar this month. This was great information.
And always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll probably have you back again because this stuff's moving so fast and furious. We'll have to keep everybody updated. But everybody, again, you will receive a link to the slides, but also a link to the on-demand version of this. So if you have colleagues or friends that you think would benefit from listening to this, feel free to share that link and they can watch it at their own leisure. So thanks, everybody. Have a great day. And we'll be back next month with another episode, another webinar. So take care. Bye-bye.